Today is Women's Wednesday on Mind Talk, and I'm your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. On Women's Wednesday, we focus on all things for and about women.
The United States is considered a source, a transit, and a destination country for men, women, and children subjected to sex trafficking and forced labor. And today's guest, Brenda Myers-Powell, was one of those persons who lived a very painful life for a very long time. Brenda Myers-Powell, thank you so much for joining us here at Mind Talk.
Well, thank you for asking me to speak.
Well, Brenda, I'd like to start from the beginning of your life, actually, and tell us a little bit about what your childhood was like. Where did you live? With whom did you live? What was going on in early life for you?
I'm going to give you kind of a brief, because, if I could not tell you, it would take tomorrow to tell you about my life growing up and how I got into prostitution. I am at this time, though, writing a book about it, so I don't want to give everything away. But one reason that I don't talk about it a lot is because in the work that I do now, I ran into so many other girls, young girls, as early as 12 years old, with stories as much more horrific than mine. But I grew up on the west side of Chicago. I had my mother died when she was 16 years old. I was 6 months old when my mother died. I was put into the care of a grandmother. And my grandmother was a functional drinker, alcoholic.
Okay.
She drank all the time. She went to work every day. She took care of me. She did things, but she drank. Sometimes on the weekends when she would have drinking buddies then in the house, she was intoxicated. And my earliest remember of getting molested was about 4 or 5 years old. It first happened to me.
4 or 5 years old?
When I first got molested. With a friend. His name was Woody, and I'll never forget how traumatized I was. I know that today I can say traumatized, because at that age, I didn't know what it was.
Right.
I was just afraid.
Right.
It continued to happen. By the time I was 9 years old, we had moved into around a place where there were prostitutes in front of the house, and I was a keychain kid, so I used to do everything. Back then, there was no daycare. Babysitters were mostly relatives or a neighbor if you could get it, So, but if you couldn't, your kid would have to, make it for themselves. Because my grandmother was also a domestic. She had to go all the way out to the suburbs to get work to feed us. So, I had to get myself ready for school, lock the door, go to school, come back, open the door, lock it, and sit down. And I was told to stay in the house until she got home, because she didn't know, she just wanted me to be safe as possible while she was working.
And at this point, you were 9 years old.
I was 9 years old. Huh. But I used to watch these prostitutes in front of the house, and they were shiny. They had the shiny dresses on and the hair. And, back then it was just like Diana Ross and all the Supremes. I wanted to be all of them. I wanted to be shiny myself, but these ladies kind of looked like that to me. But I didn't know what they were doing. And I remember referring to my grandmother and saying, "What are those women doing?" She said, "Well, I told you to never take your panties off for little boys." She says, "They take their panties off and then give them money." And I said to myself, "I'll probably do that when I grow up."
Oh, and you were saying this to yourself at 9 and 10 years old?
Yeah, because I had been already getting molested by men. They had been taking my panties off without my permission, without me wanting them to. And the way that she explained that, that they were taking their panties off and then gave them money, it seemed like a better idea than being terrorized. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So when I said it, she said, "Well, honey, whatever you be the best."
She
and
said, "What to
I
you?"
I took that and ran with it. She said, "Whatever you be the best."
And was she aware of what it was you were thinking you would be?
You know, till this day, I'm pretty sure she heard me. I don't know if she understood what I was saying.
Okay.
But that was always her mantra, you know, whatever you be the best. And by the time I was 14 years old, I had had my second child.
By 14?
Because by 14 years old, I was the little girl in the block that didn't know how to say no. I wanted somebody to love me. I wanted somebody to be
sure.
My friend. I wanted something that I wasn't getting at home. I wanted somebody to tell me I was beautiful. And if you did, you know, I had no self-esteem to tell the boys no.
Right.
They showed me something, you know, they would pay me attention. So after I had my second baby, just before my 15th birthday, it was Good Friday, 1973. It was almost Easter. Easter was the time when in the community things get, you know, everybody has a new dress. Everyone has, you know, a ham and you eat a big meal and you show off your outfit. You go to church and you do stuff like that.
Okay.
But there was no welfare check in our mailbox that Friday. And I remember my grandmother saying away that we wouldn't be in this position if I didn't jump up and if I hadn't had these babies. You know, it was my fault and I needed to fix it. And I didn't know how to fix it, you know. But there was a girl, and a woman actually, in our community that I knew was a prostitute, and I used to admire her because the way she dressed. Now, I didn't know what she did actually for a living or how it went. I had saw movies. I had read Hustler magazine, Xavier Holliday, A Happy Hooker. I had some information, you know, that these women made a lot of money. I saw the Superfly movies. These women made a lot of money in my mind.
Gotcha. And they had a lot of nice clothes.
And they had nice clothes, and they looked beautiful. So I decided to ask this girl who looks just like them. And I asked her, where'd you go? And she told me, she said, well, I can tell you where to go. She said, what do you want to do this for? And I told her, I said, we want to know food. And she said, okay. She said, she told me something about her pimp, that usually I'd have to choose her pimp. And I said, I don't want to do that. I just want to get a little money for food. And for Easter, and she told me where to go. So I went down to Clark and Division in Chicago, right on the most prominent area at that time, Rush Street, the Gold Coast, where there's a lot of rich people, and there was a lot of prostitution down there.
Hmm.
And I stood right on that corner in this very cheap dress and looking all of the 14 that I was.
14.
And men began to pick me up.
At 14.
Yeah, because my birthday hadn't came yet. My birthday would be in like 2 weeks from that.
Yeah.
And the men picked me up and they gave me money. And some of them gave me more money because they found out how young I was. Because I cried.
Mm.
I cried when I got in the cars with the way they approached me. And they were scary. And they were asking me to do things I had never done. And they knew that I was young and it was fresh because I used to, well, I was getting the kind of, you knew around here. And I would just shake my head and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But after they would hand me the money and then I would start to feel bad. And he was strange. He looked different. He was a white man. I've never, you know, all of this type of thing. I had never, this was different for me.
Yeah.
You know, and.
And you were a child. You were 14.
I was a child.
You were a baby.
And they were adults, and I kind of did what they told me to do. That's what I did. But that night, I made $400. I never saw that much money myself. You know, I met my grandmother. I never saw that much money, probably. But it was $400. I caught the bus back home and I gave it to my grandmother. She never asked me where I got it from.
She never asked you?
Where I got the money from.
At 14 years old, you come home with $400 and she doesn't ask you where it came from?
No.
What do you think about that today?
Can I say something to you about my grandmother?
Okay.
Okay. I love my grandmother today. I still love her. My grandmother worked with all what she knew, what she had.
Mm.
You know, my grandmother, that's all she knew herself, you know. People do the best that they can to do whatever they can, you know.
I hear you.
And in our community back then, you know, it was almost like a ribbon if you were a prostitute or if you're a young girl and you married an older guy that had a good job. See, these were things that were normal in our community.
Okay.
These were normalized things, you know, so.
So then from that perspective,
we were looking at things so much different today, B. And then maybe not, you know what I'm saying? Because a lot of my girls still tell me that things are happening in the same way. And that's why they get me, you know, they come to me. Well, anyway, I was going there every weekend, which kind of made me, I was getting the money.
Okay.
Only on the weekends. And about the third time I was there, I got kidnapped by two pimps. I had saw them before, but they drove around the block this time. And one got out the car. He came behind me. He bust me in the head with a pistol. And the other one threw me in the trunk.
Mm.
This is called trunking. Pimps, you know, will do this to kidnap or to season a girl to make her do what she's supposed to do, or if she's been out of pocket, they say, you know, things, if they're out of pocket means she did something wrong.
Okay. And trunking is when they will throw her in the trunk.
They'll put you in the trunk and ride around with you in the trunk.
And you have no way of knowing.
When they opened the trunk, I all I saw was corn. They were somewhere in a big cornfield, and they got me out of there, and they pulled a pistol to me and told me I was under pimp arrest. Cries for them to let me go. They said they wouldn't let me go. They took me to this hotel way out somewhere, and it was one of those little cheap, gaudy hotels, and they locked me in a closet.
Hmm.
Put me in a closet, put the chair up against the door, and this is where I stayed, and somebody was always there in the room. And in those 2 days, I did everything that a person would do normally if they weren't in the closet. I you know, I urinated on myself and things like that because they wouldn't let me out.
So you're terrified at that point.
I knocked on the door. I banged on the door and told them I was hungry. Please give me something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
They opened the door and they told me the only way I could get something to eat is that I go to work. I told them I would because it seemed like then I make it away.
Okay.
So I didn't get away. I tried to get away a couple of times, but the consequences were severe. Eventually I did, though. I got away by a truck driver rescuing me because they worked me at truck stops. And the truck driver got me out of there, which was really a nice thing because as many guys I had got in the trucks and cars with, no one tried to help or save me.
Mm.
And that wasn't the first time that I cried and told someone on my situation. They didn't want to get involved, and it continued. But this guy did, and he got me home. And when I went home, there was some abuse there still, and I couldn't stay there, so I left again.
Brenda, we're going to take a break in just a moment, but when we come back, I'd like to go back a bit because you talk about the times that you tried to get away, but that the consequences would be severe. And so I'd like for the audience to get an understanding as to what that means. And the reason that I'm asking you that question and questions to come is because so many times people who don't know will look at someone, look at a woman or a man or a boy or a girl, and make all kinds of assessments about them based on what they think they see. And so I'd like for you to be able to talk about what's real.
Well, first, one of the normal things, of course, was the verbal the verbal attacks, and then there was the physical attacks, and then there was the consistent, maybe not feeding you sometimes. They would rape you at anything to make you feel uncomfortable. There was a lot of sleep debt, lack of sleep, because they would set up and play mind games with you all night, you know, putting pistols to your head, sticking things up inside of you, just torture to keep you so intimidated and so afraid and so tired. You couldn't run. You couldn't really think straight, you know. These are things that happen to you, and they would say when you don't obey daddy, when you go outside and you don't, you know, go with the rules, because they have rules. And
what were some of the rules, Brenda? What were some of the rules?
Well, that I wasn't to talk to anybody.
Okay.
There was no reckless eyeballing. Reckless eyeballing is looking at anybody, especially another pimp or any male, period. Keeping your head down while you're in the car. Not talking, period. Let him do the talking. Just a number of rules to keep you in line, where you were under total control, and injecting the fear inside of you so that you made sure that you didn't do anything that you weren't supposed to do. And when I tried to run away, like I told you, the consequences were severe. You know,
did they
make you feel like almost as if they're everywhere. They're watching you. You cannot get away from them. And after this happens to you two or three times, you begin to believe it.
Sure.
There's a lot of psychological and mental a control that they do in order to make you give in and just do whatever they want you to do.
Brenda,
they're very good at what they do, and they play the game very well because they've been doing this.
Brenda, did they
I
ever...
I did research recently about called Victim to Victimizer with Jody Raphael, DePaul University, and one of the things that the pimps say, that they eat, sleep, and drink ways to recruit girls and to make them do what they want them to do. This is what they do every day.
Eat, sleep, and drink, figuring out ways to keep the girls under control.
Exactly. And how to recruit.
Brenda, did they ever threaten your children or your grandmother with harm if you didn't do what they wanted you to do?
They may have done that had they knew it. I never mentioned that I had any family or anything like that. You know, they knew that I didn't have another pimp, and that was enough for them.
Okay.
I never mentioned my family or my grandmother. You know, I never mentioned any of that. My instinct at that time told me not to.
Okay.
You know. But I never mentioned that either. They got another girl the same way that they got me, which is how I got away, because they were paying more attention to her. See, I was doing everything they wanted me to do. I was there five almost 6 months with them.
Oh, my.
And by that time, I was doing exactly what they wanted me to do, because it didn't seem like anyone was going to help me.
Okay.
You know, and we're talking about the pimps. What about the people? The Johns who were picking me up, who I was crying to, you know, I mean, the people who saw me in the restaurants with these guys and could see tears coming down my eyes. And, you know, I was even slapped one time in the restaurant. Nobody did nothing about it. You know, what about those? There were those, you
it's
know, those
true.
Incidents. We have to stop turning a blind eye to the things that we want to blame it on the pimps and the traffickers. But what about the people who are buying, the demand side? What about that? You know, and they know that these girls are terribly young. They know that they're probably working for somebody, being tortured, and all these things are happening to them. Yet the only concern they have at that time is getting services, you know?
It's pretty sad.
Pretty sad. Because it takes the demand to supply this industry.
Right.
It's a billion-dollar industry.
Billion dollars.
And this money is not coming from the pimps and the traffickers, it's coming from the people who get the services.
What yeah. would you like to see happen? I mean, how would you like to see us as a nation sort of turn around the way we think about all this? Because you're right, you know, the prostitutes are typically the ones who are arrested, who are harmed even through the judicial system, and the Johns kind of go along their merry way.
Well, one of the things that we have been doing in Illinois, we have gotten stiffer penalties for traffickers and pimps, right?
Okay.
And we are working on stiffer penalties for the demand side, the Johns, the customers, right?
Okay.
One important thing that needs to be done is to have more services, not Band-Aid services, but holistic services for these women once they can get out of this, you know, once they've been rescued or once they accept the help. They need holistic services. They need services that, first of all, they need a place to stay.
A safe place.
While they're getting all of these services, they need a place that works on prostitution only, on sex workers only. I don't like the word sex workers because it seems like it's legal. But I have to say that because there's a lot of people probably out here that would rather hear that word than prostitution. But prostituted women need safe services. They need a place that they can rebuild themselves so they can take care of themselves. It took a village to raise me again. There was such a place at that time, which was was under the leadership of a woman called Edwina Gately, a very awesome woman. But she left a place. It was called Genesis House, and it got under, you know, some bad direction, and it closed down. But while this was an amazing place while she was there, and that was how I got turned around after 25 years of being a prostitute, having been shot 5 times.
Oh,
having been stabbed 13 times, having all the things that happened to me, you know, the trauma, the jail, the manipulation, the brainwashing of pimps. I stayed there at Genesis House for like 18 months, almost 2 years, and became anew, started my life anew. Now I help women in the same way with Dreamcatcher. The Dreamcatcher Foundation
and
here
that's
in Chicago, which is
a foundation that you formed
with me and my partner Stephanie Daniels Wilson, and I started that organization. It has been in existence now for 8 years. We still don't have everything that we need in order to do the work we do. I call us, I call us a small business that does big things. You know, we're like the little horse that could, or however you say that.
The little engine that could.
The little engine that could. Yeah, we're like the little engine that could, and we would, and we do. But we need a house, and that's what we're trying to form now with salaries, so that we can do this 24/7. But her and I both have full time jobs, and we do this. After we get out for work.
So it sounds like you have
both
two.
It
sounds like you both have two full-time jobs.
You're right. But we're both so passionate about it, we won't stop. We won't stop because you can't stop when you see a young girl abused or a woman come to you and ask for help. How can you stop? How can you turn away, especially when you've been through it and you know what it feels like? You know what it feels like to be coerced, and you know what it feels like to be beaten. You know what it feels like to want love.
But you know, Brenda, there are so many people who, as I said earlier, see folks who are trafficked as being throwaway people, and it would not occur to them that these folks needed help, deserved help, could be helped.
Well, that's unfortunate that they feel that way. I mean, in our society today, I do see people that feel like that. But now, because of the internet, traffickers are in our home, in middle-class homes, in great homes, coercing beautiful young girls who you would never think would be out there prostituting. They're right in your home. There was a time when you could lock your door and go to bed and know that your child was safe in her room and nobody was bothering her. But now, since you have the internet, you have all these Craigslist, Backpage, all these websites that open up this world to your children, you know, and they pose as being someone else, but this is who they are. They're in your homes right now, and you may think that you're safe. You may think that your daughter's safe, but because children are children and they do what adults tell them, and teenagers also. These people know how to manipulate and coerce these young girls into it, even if she comes from the best home. I've had girls come from great homes who may have ran away or got mad with their mother or had an argument, you know. And this opened the door. Another thing that the pimps said in the research that I did, they said, if you don't pick your daughter up from school, I will.
Oh.
If you don't pick her up from the mall, I'll get her. If you, wherever you're not, I am. If you don't pick her up from the game, I'll be there, because it's a business to me.
That is so scary.
It is immensely scary. And so those people who think that the women that are out there they chose to do this, this girl, you know, they don't know anything. Because they've got blinders on, and this is what people need to do. They need to stop with the blinders. They need to open their eyes to see this, to see what's really happening. They need to get educated on this. We need to tell our little boys that it's not cute to exploit girls, period. We need to raise them like that so that they don't grow up being the next generation of customers and Johns, you know?
Absolutely. And there are also boys who are trafficked, and I don't think we think about that nearly as much as we talk about it enough. That's right.
Young boys, transgenders, we don't talk about that population enough. Even I don't talk about it enough. But my expertise is with girls because I've been through that experience.
Right.
But while out there, all of these factors were around me, boys and transgenders. Were out there with me, caught up in this, you know.
And not just transgender. I mean, boys, straight, gay, doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
They're boys or they're girls. And as you quoted, if you don't pick your child up, I will. That is so chilling.
Because it's about supply and demand.
Yeah.
And they have to supply the demand that these people are asking for. And that's why I say we're so short into what we're really seeing. We're not seeing the victimization of this, We're not seeing the victimization at all. We're just looking at it as sex or as someone who's chosen. Or maybe she's a sex addict. I can tell you, I've talked to over hundreds of young girls and women who have been in prostitution. Not one has told me, well, you know I'm a sex addict, right?
Yeah.
They hated every bit of it, you know. There was no sex addict involved in there, what they were doing.
I would like for you to talk more about the internet. You know, a number of the Mind Talk listeners have children, certainly, who are on the internet, and I'd like for you to share with them what they need to be thinking about when they're leaving their kids alone on the internet.
Absolutely. Not on the internet, chat phones. They're everywhere.
Okay.
They pose as friends, or they befriend a young girl. A lot of times they'll even pose as a producer, because all of our young girls love these videos that are out. And they'll say, send me five photos of yourself. They don't have to be revealing. They don't have to be anything, just to see if you qualify to be in the video.
Okay.
And send us five photos, and we'll send you $250 for that, right? And the young person will take the photos, and they'll send them to them. And this was actually something that happened. And they'll send them the $250 on a card. That's what they'll do after they get the photos, right?
Okay.
And we'll be in touch with you later to see if you qualify. Well, they're traffickers. They're pimps. They've got time. They know that if they pull this girl in the right way, they'll invest some money into getting this young lady. Because just like you can sell a bag of dope one time, but you can sell a human being over and over again. So now they'll call her back, or I mean, they'll reach her on the internet, right? And say, you qualify. You have been, you know, selected as one of the five finalists.
So now she's really excited.
Right. And now we need an in-person interview. And if you want to come, we will send you a ticket to get there.
Wow.
See, because we want you to know this. We're producers. We're big time people.
Okay.
Even on their website, they may have pictures of some rapper that's famous that the girls can relate to. And they fix it where it's if they're buddies, they're fine again. Uh-huh. You know. All right. Now she sends a ticket, and the girl says, "My mother will never let me go, but I can say I'm going over Lisa's house for the weekend."
Mm-hmm.
And because they said it's just a weekend, Lisa covered for me. I'm going to go do this interview, and I'm coming right back. They gave me the ticket. She doesn't know. That's not a two-way ticket.
Uh-huh.
It's a one-way ticket.
Okay.
For the girl that bites, right? She goes there to Atlanta, Florida, Las Vegas, wherever they want her to come.
And those are considered some of the hub areas, correct?
Right. Right.
Okay.
They meet her at the airport, and you don't see her anymore. And by the time mommy checks up, maybe she calls the next day to see how things going over there.
Mm-hmm.
She's not really there.
Uh-huh.
If mommy checks up, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And by the time mommy does find out, they've got her child and they're gone. And hopefully we'll see her again.
Hopefully,
and
but
on a milk carton. Or you get a call and she's not alive. Those are some of the horrific stories, but a lot of times they just use them over and over again, and they get paid. We have FBI, awesome FBI, and awful, awesome officers that are experts in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to, you know, always tracking and tracing these type of things. But to the average person, they don't even know anything about this.
Right, and it wouldn't occur to them.
Don't even know anything about this, you
right.
know?
Would not occur to them.
No, it doesn't. That who would go that far? But they do. They go as far as it takes.
Brenda,
I said again, this is a billion-dollar industry.
Mm-hmm.
And one girl can bring a trafficker or a pimp over $100,000 a year. That's lowballing it. That's very lowballing it.
Okay.
And I'm saying $100,000 to $200,000 a year. One girl.
Gotcha.
So we're talking about a lot of money here.
Brenda, I noticed that you use the word pimp and traffickers interchangeably. Should we think about them as being the same thing?
They are the same thing.
Okay.
But I say it because, like I said, some people refer it. I want people to know that it's just not the guy with the feather on his hat and the loud suit.
Okay.
There are business. This is a business. There are business. And I don't want people to think of pimps as only being men. There are women pimps.
Right.
There are businessmen who with the shirt and the tie. This is a billion-dollar industry. When it comes to money, people forget values. And they do just about anything. I also want you to know, I wanted to know, the Dreamcatcher Foundation has just, we did a documentary about the work that, there was a documentary done about the work that Dreamcatcher does.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to the Sundance. It was accepted in Sundance, and we'll be at Sundance in January. So there will be a documentary out about the work that Dreamcatcher does. And the reason I mentioned it, because if you want to see what it really looks like, if you want to go inside of prostitution, this documentary is going to take you there. It's the work I do, and I take you inside of the streets, the girls, the internet, and all of that.
What's the name of the documentary, Brenda?
The documentary is called The Dream Catchers.
Okay.
And is we're very proud of it. It was accepted to Sundance. It must be pretty good if it got accepted in Sundance. We're pretty happy.
I think you're absolutely right about that. Now, let me ask you this. You're saying that women can be pimps as well as men. And, you know,
absolutely.
What happens, it's interesting the roles that we sort of consciously or unconsciously assign to genders. And we've already established that boys and men can be trafficked, but typically what we think about are girls and women. We think about men as being the pimps. We don't think about women as being the pimps. Is there a way to... you're not going to know because nobody's going to walk down the street with a T-shirt.
Know. Well, these women become those the girl's best friend. You know, who better to get a girl's trust?
Okay.
You've warned her against being, don't talk to guys, you know, right?
Absolutely.
Don't get, you know, that you can't trust them. But do you tell her about that girl that, you know, and she may be a little bit older, just a little bit older than your... than the girls that she's talking to, but she may be in her early 20s or late 20s. You know, she dresses in the, you know, latest fashion. She has the expensive, you know, purses and all the designer clothes, and she may have a nice little car, and they'll see her in the mall, and they'll see her at the nail shop.
Mm-hmm.
They'll see her running around and about, and they really like her because she has the extension here, that the expensive kind, and they're probably asking her, oh, you look so, you know, you look great, you know, blah, blah, blah. She says, oh, yeah, and then she'll start befriending them. Let's go have lunch. Y'all want to go out to lunch with me? Let's go out to lunch, you know. But she starts to befriend them. And they get inquisitive about how she is getting this type of money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how is she dressing like that? How can you afford that? And she says, well, it's really nothing, you know. Or she may give them a gift, you know. And they become like, she's like a sister to me, you know, or something. She really understands me. Well, that's one of the biggest things teenagers, young kids want somebody that understands them.
Right.
That they can talk to.
Right.
And she becomes that woman. And now she, you know, next thing you know, she says, well, I can show you how to, you know, if you're up for it, you know, if you're game for it. They don't really know what they're getting, but they think they can do it because they think it makes them beautiful. If they can put on beautiful clothes and go on how it's introducing them, just talk to them. But it's not just conversation.
You know, one of the...
And if they get through the first time, then she knows that she's got him locked in.
Okay.
Or he knows that he's got her locked in.
Okay. One of the things that seems to continually come up in our conversation is the need for parents of children and to ask questions. And, you know, we hear so much about you don't want to violate your child's right to privacy, or you don't want to seem too inquisitive, or you don't want to seem like you don't trust your child. But on the other hand, if you don't ask your child 50 questions, and even then sometimes you may not know, where is there a safe balance?
Well, the right to privacy, I don't understand that given to a child. But trust is something you want to build with your child.
Okay.
And that way, there is no privacy if there's trust, because a child that has a relationship, that has open conversation with a parent, doesn't hide these type of things or these type of conversations, you know.
Okay.
This is a child that'll talk to her mom, you know, something weird happened the other day, Mom. I want to tell you about it, blah, 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 because this parent has an open conversation with them. You know, they can see that parent, you know, for me, when I married, my husband had two teenagers, right?
Okay.
I went straight in. With, at that time, I was HIV specialist. I went right in with having that conversation with her and her friends in my living room. This is how this goes, and this is why I want you always to carry a condom. Even though you say you're not having sex, that time when it does happen, you never know, because I didn't know what was going to happen to me. I needed a condom. So I want you to have those with you so that, you know, you don't get infected. I talked to them about the internet and the chat forums, and knowing about it is when they said, Well, yeah, it did. I talked to a guy like that, and I think he probably was too, but I didn't talk to him anymore. He was a temp. They opened up, you know. If you're afraid to have that conversation, then they're afraid to talk to you about it.
Right. But a lot of times you're right. I think the parents are afraid to have the conversation.
Yes. You must know, you must have it. And then when you have it, you must be comfortable with what's rolling off of your tongue. And they see this, and they're comfortable with chatting back with you. And you can't stop them if they say something, well, I know this, or, yeah, I talked to somebody before, instead of saying, why didn't you tell me, or something like that. You say, wow, this is why we're having this conversation again, and I'm so glad that nothing happened to you.
Okay.
Let's talk about that.
So you know, don't do the 20 questions.
Human trafficking, yeah. Conference or something that's educating about this so that they can learn also. You know, you go, you can come back and teach it to them. What's the appropriate age? You know, you're going to ask me, what's appropriate age, right? The average age in entry into prostitution is 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So we can start talking about that in junior high.
Okay. That's a story of amazing courage and survival. So I'd like for you just to relax and get comfortable. We will be right back. And we're back. This is Pamela Brewer. You are listening to Mind Talk. Today's guest, Brenda Myers Powell, was one of those persons who lived a very painful life for a very long time. You know, I noticed that there was a very interesting group of young people who put together a fundraiser for the Dreamcatcher Foundation. And as I recall, they were fifth graders.
They were, and they were awesome. They were awesome and beautiful children. Now, we have to change our language a little bit in order to talk to them about it.
Okay.
But we got the point across, and they understood it in the fifth grade that this was an act against humanity, right?
Brenda, you know,
human rights were violated. So that's what they understood, and they were awesome, and they raised the money for our organization. They were a very powerful group of younger kids, too.
Well, it's just extraordinary. So when you talk to these fifth graders, you said that you approached it from the perspective of being a human rights violation, and that was something that they completely got. Just tell us more about that. It sounds really amazing.
Well, first of all, I can't take credit for that because actually my partner, Stephanie Daniels-Wilson, did that talk to those fifth graders, right?
Well, kudos to Stephanie.
Right. But she got the message across direct because we have a curriculum that we do.
Ah.
And she took that curriculum, but she toned it down and made it, you know, so that the fifth graders could get the message. Now, let me say something to you and parents out there that are listening. Our kids know a lot more than you think they know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is the part of our job that is important. What they learn other places, we must know if it's the right thing that they've learned.
Right.
What have they learned? What have do they know? And do they know the reality of it? You understand what I'm saying? Because they can learn a lot of stuff.
Absolutely,
you can learn a lot of stuff out when they're out of your eyesight and out of your earshot because of the internet. But we must redirect it. They can look at one of these reality shows, right? And we could sit with them and look at it. And we could tell them, listen, this here is not right. Or this is not the way that this is not, you know, this is not really a great thing. It's just entertainment for television because people like it. You've got to direct the process of thinking.
Right.
So that they don't go off into another area.
Okay.
And that's what this whole human trafficking thing is about. We must give them the pointers for their, you know, for that age group, but let them know in a nutshell, this is an act against human rights, right? This
Absolutely.
Is slavery. And they got that. But what amazed me mostly is the teacher. See, they had a great teacher.
And how did, what did the teacher do?
Well, she gave them an opportunity to choose what they wanted to work for that. I mean, do as a group.
Okay.
And raise funds for, and I think there were like a couple of other topics, and they chose human trafficking.
Wow.
And they may have chosen it because they had heard about it, but not enough about it to realize, you know, and they wanted to know more about it. These kids were hungry for information.
Mm-hmm.
And then thank kudos to the school that allowed them to do it. Because
that's true.
Some of our schools don't allow this type of conversation to happen.
It's very true.
And we really need to because it's so prevalent in all our communities.
Well, you know, I just
may think that because you're in a great community and you pay good you pay taxes and you don't see any of this in there doesn't mean it's not there.
Well, you know, I hear so many things about schools nowadays, as we all do, and there are some schools where the behavior that's literally going on in the hallways makes these children ripe for being trafficked if they're not already being trafficked. And so
you're having oral sex in our junior high, our kids
yeah.
are. I've had conversations with you because I've worked all over. Some of the girls that have talked to me, who come to me at in high school, but they said, well, how long have you been doing this? Well, I've been doing this, Miss Brenda, since I was in sixth grade.
Oh,
I started having oral sex, or I started to do this because sometimes of the misconduct. Now, let me say this, in the homes, we got to watch out for the homes, too.
Mm.
What's happening in your home with your child that you don't know about? There's so many different sides of this that we're not looking at.
Right.
We're just not looking at. If my daughter, if I'm a great mom, because I usually work with a lot of single parents and
okay.
then two parent families also, but I'm a great mom, but I work hard every day. Most of my time is spent at work. I don't
mm-hmm.
know everything that's going on with my kid.
Right.
I don't know if there's an uncle or if there's somebody in
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
that's done something to my child, you know, or a boyfriend. And once I find out, how am I going to respond? Do I support my child or do I support this man?
Right. And unfortunately, there are times when the choice is not made to support the child.
Absolutely. And I've heard those are very normal stories,
right.
you know, where I wasn't believed when I was younger and it kind of made me stand back off from the very parent that was supposed to rescue me and save me, didn't.
Right. Brenda, let me ask you this. Your life was, quite frankly, horrific. I mean, it sounds like it started off with a lot of pain and a lot of loss, and it continued that way for many years. At the point that you were able to actually get out of this life, why go back into it and spend so much energy trying to help other people? Why not just walk away and stay away?
You'd have to talk to God about that. I have no idea. You know, I just was, I remember doing all the right things and wanting to be a lady and get a husband and all those beautiful things now in my life, you know. And I remember the first thing that came to me while I was, you know, going through my meditations and reading self-help books and doing all the great things that I was to get back into life. And I used to pray every night, and I asked God, okay, what do you want me to do? You've been so great to me. I'm out of this lifestyle. I'm learning to be a beautiful woman. And what is it that you have me to do? Because I had everything seemed to be fitting and doing very well, right? And I remember God said, I want you to go back and help those women. And at that time, also, I was on an abstinence, right, where I wasn't having a relationship with anybody, and it seemed really crazy how things kind of fell in line. You know, I started doing this work.
Okay.
Advocating for women who had, you know, were in prostitution, helping them get out of prostitution. And then there was, after that, I met my husband, you know. And, but the work became so important to me because I used to sit and think about the women I saw. I knew from prostitution when I was out there, the ones who had died, the ones who got found in the trash can, the ones that, when I was in California, got murdered by serial killers, right? I couldn't get those women out of my head. And it seemed that if I didn't do something, that I would be leaving them behind in the gutter. And I didn't want to do that. I felt that each and every one of the women that I had ever met, ran into, or knew in my life deserved the type of life that I have been given, the second chance, you know. So I decided that I needed to go back out there and help. I needed to be the face, per se, if I needed to be. But right now I don't need to be that face as much as I need to be the educator for other young girls, you know. I need to educate. I need to give girls what was given to me to bloom and become, you know, self-supporting without any outside contributions, you know, to become the woman that I was always meant to be. Because no little girl is meant to be a prostitute. No little boy is meant to be a prostitute.
Right. You know, there, and I know you know this, there's at least a group or two out there who celebrate their right to be a prostitute, and who celebrate that life, and who are upset with people like you who are saying it's not a good thing, it's a bad thing, and you don't have to live this way. What
and
do you say?
To them, to you and them, I say, wherever there's a pro, there's a con, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's life. When I was prostituting, if you had talked against prostituting or asked me, was I happy doing it, I would have told you, you must be crazy. You better try to do it yourself. Look at me. I'm making all this money.
Okay.
I'm happy, you know. But if I hadn't told myself I was happy, I would have probably been dead a long time ago.
Okay.
I would have probably committed suicide.
Gotcha.
Because for years, I prostituted without any drugs. There wasn't any drugs in my life. There was just me prostituting. And so one day it became too hard to go into a room with a guy. The fear became so big.
Mm-hmm.
The everything inside of me couldn't do it, and I had to take a drink. And then the drink couldn't do it, and then I had to smoke up a joint.
Mm-hmm.
The joint couldn't do anything. It was something more. The more I, the longer I stayed in it, the more it seemed to elevate into me having to put something inside of me to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got addicted to the stuff that I was putting inside of me. And I started to degenerate, you know. And I became to a low where I thought I would ever never be. But, yeah, there are women out there with that type of feeling right there. I had that type of feeling at that time.
So you get that.
That it was great because of... I thought that was the only way to go. And we in our society, we condemn prostitution, but we also uphold it.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there's so much confusion here, you know. Okay, it's not legal in Las Vegas, but it's legal on the outskirts of Vegas and in around the areas in Nevada, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have the ranches and things, and it's okay here, but it's not okay there. And then mostly all the media that, you know, objectify women in some kind of way.
It's true.
And sell them, you know.
Sure.
You don't see a movie too much. There's not a movie that I haven't seen a prostitute. I don't know.
Gotcha.
You know, just walking by or a scene.
Gotcha.
You know, Pretty Woman, it's No, there's never been a Richard Gere in my life, and I haven't known about him in being in too many of the other women that I know, you know.
There's no
Richard Gere.
I hear you.
So we want to, you know, make this look like it's something beautiful, a woman who's having sex and she's getting paid and it's okay. But you don't know who that woman was or that child was before she became a woman or what happened to that child and she became a prostitute.
Brenda Myers Powell, how do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more and or be a help to you?
Well, please go to my website, the Dreamcatcher Foundation, the, in front of it, thedreamcatcherfoundation.org.
Okay.
Please go to the website, take a look at it, see the amazing things that we are doing, and support an organization that is doing this type of work at the Dreamcatcher Foundation. We would love for you to support the Dreamcatcher Foundation, but some organization that is doing direct services.
Okay.
Because that's where most of the suffering comes from. Organizations like myself, the Dreamcatcher Foundation, we don't get enough. We're just not getting the monies to do the work that we're doing, but we're still doing it because we have a passion for it.
So gotcha.
If it's in your heart, you know, around this time of the year to donate, please donate to the Dreamcatcher Foundation. We would appreciate it, and so would the ladies that we're working with.
And I have to tell you that I want to compliment you again on being invited into the Sundance Festival, because that's huge. So I want you to let us know what happens.
Thank you so much. We're excited.
You should be excited. Brenda Myers Powell, the Dreamcatcher Foundation, thedreamcatcherfoundation.org. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
Thank you, Pam, and thank you for asking the hard questions today, because I do a lot of interviews, but I love it when someone asks the hard questions that you have today. Thank you so much.
It has been my pleasure and my honor. Thank you. And folks, thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. And remember, you can always listen to Mind Talk on demand at myndtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. Today's producer, Bernie Simpson. The social media coordinator, Courtney Ebu. Thank you very much for your help. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service and is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed medical or mental health professional. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. And remember, for more information about Mind Talk, please go to myndtalk.org. And remember as well, folks, if it is unacceptable, then that is what it is, unacceptable. You take care.